Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Join the Chad Duke Show on Thursday, September 5th at Monk's Barbecue in Percival, Virginia for a football kickoff watch party. Coach Jay Gruden will be live in the building. Monk's will be open late for all solid dudes that want to watch the first game of the season, the Kansas City No Lips versus the Baltimore Hey There Boys. You will have four chances to win a Chad Duke Show custom Yeti tumbler for free. We will also have the new full line of CDS Show merchandise, including brand new crew neck sweatshirts, koozies, magnets, and t-shirts. Food and drink specials, giveaways, and illegal gambling will be pervasive with Jay Gruden and Hotman Ted in attendance. It will be an evening of football, friendos, and fun at Monk's on September 5th. Strap on your boots and make plans to be there.
Just keep matriculating the ball down the field, boys.
This is Both Types of Sports, where we cover and analyze the NFL and the NFL offseason.
Both types of sports with Shoot and Tour. Football discussion on the internet.
All right, I'm not sure when people are listening to this, but as Tor and I are recording this, there is breaking news anytime it feels like breaking. The Philadelphia Eagles have announced they have agreed to terms on a trade with the Washington Commanders for their fifth, well, it was for a fifth round pick, but Jahan Dotson was at the Washington football team's first round pick. I forget, it all runs together. He's been there 2 years. They picked him up in exchange for a third round pick and 2 7th round picks from the 2025 draft. He now becomes, presumably injury concerns aside, the third option in Philadelphia. He's 24 years old. He was a 16th overall pick in the 2022 draft tour. 12 games, 35 passes, 523 yards, and 7 touchdowns as a rookie. I remember people were ginned up. 17 games last season, only 49 receptions, 518 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Of course, that probably has something to do with the fact that Sam Howell was running for his fucking life the entire season. I believe he was sacked 52 times last year. He's got that Patrick Ramsey look in Seattle right now, having getting gangbanged. I mean, you don't need to list the names, Tor. We can go down the Donovan McNabb trail as long as we want, but it just seems like smart franchises victimize bad franchises, and maybe the Commanders are an improving franchise, but I don't know. All of the response that I've seen on X has said this is a very one-sided trade right now.
This does not look like a franchise that is trying to give their young quarterback the best shot. And whether or not you're in camp and the rumblings of, hey, the number two wide receiver position is still open, that was a bit confusing when I saw those reports a week or so ago. But regardless, I've seen Jahan Dotson play football in the NFL, and he wins one-on-one battles. He makes very good contested catches, not just the highlight that Kirk Benkert is quote tweeting, but genuine good contested catches. Felt like a complimentary piece to Terry McLaurin. And And you ship him off, not just to another team. You're not just losing a talented wideout on your team. You're shipping him to a team that you play twice a year in the division that constantly bullies you year after year. It is, if I was a Skins fan, Washington Commanders fan, I'd be incensed. I am incensed just as a follower of their team. It's unbelievable to think that Alamide Zaccheaus, Luke McCaffrey, and Diami Brown, who has done much less than Dotson has, will be taken over the number 2 and 3 and 4 subsequent spots now that he's gone. It's unbelievable.
The Luke McCaffrey, Cliff Kingsbury hype train seems to be in full effect. I assume he's now the starting slot receiver. So you got Terry McLaurin, Diami Brown, Luke McCaffrey. Not a lot of depth on this chart with Dotson's egress. And look, I saw that, you know, Jaden Daniels had that nice long pass, Diami Brown. You've been waiting around for him to show himself. But what is this, year three for that experiment? I mean, maybe he's going to be improved. They really have to have a lot of confidence in some of these younger guys to give up on a first round pick this way. And look, a third round pick, it's decent. Like, that's a decent asset to get in this league. But I'm with you, Tor. I want to go overboard with the web. I'm not trying to rely on 72-year-old Zach Ertz. Like, we're going to resurrect his career. Like, I want an embarrassment. I want what Caleb Williams in Chicago has. And I know not everybody can have that. But yeah. I want to do the best job I possibly can. I don't want to be selling off assets right before the season begins when my rookie quarterback, you know, he is the franchise moving forward.
And oh my God, what quarterbacks were throwing to Jahan Dotson in the last 2 years? Give it to Daniels and see what they can do. Give them at least, I don't know, give them up until the trade deadline. Maybe then, maybe you could get some value out, because a third and 2/7 is a bag of chips and 2 dog turds, in my opinion. It doesn't do anything for this franchise. I'm sick of trading good players for draft picks in the third round, fifth, sixth round. It doesn't translate. It just doesn't translate, especially for the Commanders, who have drafted so poorly. And I know they drafted poorly under Ron Rivera. Everyone's highlighting the awful picks that they made, especially in the first round. Regardless, I thought Dotson was one of the four that they had that could have actually blossomed into a really good receiver. And now he's just not there. Now we just gave up on him for who knows. Who knows what's going to happen, opposed to it's no one wants one in the hand anymore. It's two in the bush. Give me two in the bush. I can't stand it.
I think two in the bush is what they already had in Philadelphia, right? I mean, and they're still looking.
Their bush is full in Philly. They can't get a bigger.
They got a big 70s bush up there. Look, man, I'm taking a look at their offense last year. Yeah, DeAndre Swift is no longer there. Go over 1,000 yards. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith both go over 1,000 yards. I don't know, man. It's an embarrassment of riches, and they already have a quarterback that's played at a championship caliber level, despite, you know, whatever swoon took place. So, and I cannot get away. It's a, you know, the general manager in Philadelphia. They're hoping they're heading in that direction, the Commanders. But what he's done, what every Philadelphia general manager's done since I've been was a fan of Washington, is fleece their little brother down the road, down 95, and this feels like that right now. Does this have something to do? I saw somebody bring this up in the chat with a Brandon Ayuk trade possibly coming. I mean, does it make sense that they're making this move because that's off the table?
That's the only way it would make sense to me. And that's the only way you could be able to rationalize it to fans, is to make a legitimate hard push for Brandon Ayuk to become the true number two on this team within the next couple of weeks. That's the only way you could rationalize it for me. And if I was a Commanders fan,
if you end up with Ayuk and a third round pick, and you have, yeah, I mean, but that's a giant if. The last report we saw, I thought, was that the 49ers are like really committed to bringing him back. We're committed to bringing this gentleman back. There he is. Mr. Sean Salisbury joins us each and every Thursday on Both Types of Sports right here for the duration. Sal's, I don't know, locally, I don't know if it's a big story in the H town, but locally here, when you give up on a first round pick, and then you also trade that first round pick in the division to Philadelphia, which, as you know, Sal, that don't go the Redskins / football team / Commanders way all that often. It doesn't go well for them. Jahan Dotson for and a fifth round pick in the draft in exchange for the third and 2/7 to the Eagles. He joins AJ Brown and all those weapons they have up there. We're not bullish on it in this locale currently.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm always about making good to be with you guys, by the way. I'm always about making my competitive roster and a Super Bowl favorite in the NFC. I'm all about making them have to suffer more. No offense, but I just am. I understand trades and money and what you're looking for and why guys are not working out and why you're moving guys, but it feels to me that this is just another way for Philadelphia to load up on what is already an explosive offensive football team, trying to get back to getting all those sacks they got on defense 2 years ago, unlike last year, and making Jalen Hurts back to what earned him all that money. So, you know, I understand relationships, but I'd like to keep my relationships in the division as buddies, unless I know. To me, a good trade is when both sides win, right? Now, I'm sure there is there any, is the buzz going on, Chad, where you are? Anybody like the trade?
Right now, it looks like a gigantic celebration, New Year's Eve Prince party, like it's 1999 for Eagles fans on social media. Okay, that's what it looks like.
So. For me, it is. It seems like a win for Philadelphia again. So you made a strong team stronger, and if they stay healthy, they're to me clearly the team to beat in the NFC East. And so trades are great. If they work in your favor, and we never know. We went through this in baseball, just a real quick one, with Kikuchi in Toronto here a couple weeks ago, and Dana Brown made the trade, and I'm telling you, they were lighting him up. He comes on my show every week, lighting his ass up about why would you give up Joey Loperfido, who wasn't performing great but was a fan favorite, his energy, and a young kid who's got game, and then, you know, Wagner's son, who's got some legacy in baseball, and he's an infielder that's pretty good. And then Bloss, who was a good pitcher. And they're like, why would you give up those three for Kikuchi, who's struggling? Well, you see now. He's had four starts here and has been pretty damn good. You got to see the forest through the trees. So at the time, they were saying, we got fleeced here. Now, if you had to make the trade over again, considering the Astros are a World Series team, you would make the trade. So with this, I know we still have to give it time. It's the pre-trade talk, and then it's the post-trade performance talk. Let's find out 8 games into the season for them, if it worked for them, and for the Washington Commanders, if this eventually somewhere along the line with draft picks is going to work out as well.
I trust Adam Peters more than I do previous administration Sal's, if I'm a fan of this team. But what Tor and I were talking about right as you were coming on is we don't know as much as you do about quarterbacks, but what you want is what Caleb Williams has. You want to surround your young quarterback with an embarrassment of riches. I think a lot of reasons why people think Sam Darnold's got a chance to resuscitate his career and pull a Baker Mayfield in Minnesota is because of all those weapons. And getting rid of a first-round caliber talent that's caught touchdowns on your team, Tor, you pointed out, I've seen him play football against NFL caliber CBs. These guys you drafted that you're telling me now are just as good, I haven't seen that. That's the part that doesn't add up, is like make it as easy as possible for your quarterback in an offense that last year, it's not the same offense, but same team, gave up, what, 52 sacks for Sam Howell.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chad. I don't. To me, we are such an, and think about the league we're in, fellas. We're not in a league that's just kind of quarterback friendly. We want quarterbacks drive this league. And Washington, who's in a division that's got, you know, and you've got to play some defense, but I'm a greedy son of a bitch, man, as a guy on offense. There's never enough. They're just like pitching. I never have enough weapons on offense, just like pitching. You give me five frontline. The Atlanta Braves, when Smoltz and Glavin and Maddox were doing it and Steve Avery was your fourth starter, if I'm them, greedy, I want two more like them. You know, let's go back in time and make Max Fried a guy who could have pitched with those guys. And it's the same with offense. I don't care if it's Mahomes, and I don't care if it's a young quarterback like Sam Howell last year. I want as many weapons as I can, because what that does, the bandwidth creates so much movement, or should I say noise, in a defensive coordinator's head, even when the guys aren't there. That's going on here in Houston, adding Mixon and adding Stephon Diggs. People in the division now are talking about, okay, what does it do to defensive coordinators just preparing for them, whether they're involved in that heavily in that plan or not, which they will be, but it just may use up practice time. Quick story about this, guys. I can remember when I was playing. Somebody the week before we'd see on tape ran like a double reverse or a pitchback pass to the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
And some dick'em was what we called them, the old dick'em play, right? And that the guys are going to run once every 10 games and maybe once a season, maybe twice if they're lucky. And I'm telling you, we would spend practice time on scout team running that play over and over again because they were afraid. One play, 70 plays and all the substance, inside zone, stretch play, curl flat combo, dig post. But that one play, they were so afraid they'd use up their practice time, which meant if they're using up their practice time, you damn well know what they were doing in meetings, right?
Right.
It's the same thing here. If I got weapons, even if they're not every week, you know, the great thing about weapons is four guys can be the number one guy each week, is that you go into a game plan and you use up a coordinator and defense's time on a practice field in a meeting room, that wouldn't normally be used up. It's the same thing with a play. Oh, when did they do this? Dude, they did it once in 4,000 plays. Yeah, but what if? I mean, coordinators and coaches chase ghosts and borrow trouble more than any fucking guy on the planet. And I get it, but they do. And then you come out of the game and say, well, we just got gouged for 280 in the rushing game because we were prepared for the dick'em. And oh, they dicked him all right, sure. Right up the gut. So it's the same. You give more players teams weapons and take away from the core of your weapons and guys that you've – Chad, you hit it. I like assets and draft picks and all that, but I also like proven players or players that I've seen do it. And while Washington, I'm hoping that we see another level for them, and maybe you get to a point with Jaden Daniels, you say, well, he can beat you with his feet. I don't want to live like that. I want to give him weapons to where they can make the ordinary play all the time.
Sean, it looks like Denver is trying to see something from their first-round draft pick. Bo Nix named their starter, first Broncos rookie quarterback to start week one since John Elway. Do you like the decision to see him start over the likes of Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham, or do you think that they should have gotten some reps early on in the year?
Well, speaking of knowing what people do and how they play, yes, I do like the decision. Chad, you and I have talked about this for years, and it bears repeating. And first off, while Stidham's got some ability, I don't know if he can sustain being a starter. And as much as we are intrigued with Zach Wilson's talent, I mean, God love him, but boy, does anybody yank more balls into the ground on simple. Here's the problem with Zach Wilson. I just talked about making the ordinary play all the time is what made Breeze and Manning and all these great players make the play they're supposed to make, simple play all the time. I say it every week and I'll continue to say it. Zach Wilson will make a throw that'll make you like, I mean, your balls will be hanging down. You're like, gosh, dang, look at that throw. That's like six Russian cosmonauts and a micrometer. I don't know what the hell that means, but I know it's explosive. Yet the other side of it is he can't make the throw to the flat on a regular basis. May yank one, may throw it high, may overlook the guy in the flat because he wants to make the spectacular comeback throw. It's like, dude, just make the simple play. So I've seen both those guys. Bo Nix gives me a chance to do a whole bunch of stuff with my offense. And you guys, Sean Payton likes a little scientist stuff with him, right? He likes the ability to – and what he's got that he didn't have with Breeze, he had with Taysom Hill. What he had with Taysom Hill, he didn't have with Breeze. What you have with Bo Nix is Bo Nix is a better thrower than Taysom Hill, and obviously Bo Nix is a better runner than Drew Breeze. So this is a great project and a great – and when I say project, I mean for the mad scientist, for him to get in there like Andy Reid does with these guys and do a bunch of different shit. But when it comes to who's the best player of the three, it's him. Bo Nix now, he's a little older. What's he going to be? He's 24, I think, guys. Older, played in a couple systems, has seen all kinds of, you know, different offenses. And he performed in the preseason. He gives you great ability to extend the play. He's gotten so much better from the pocket. He's a smart guy with incredible competitiveness. I think Sean Payton realizes it. I had Russ Wilson. I know the veteran talk experience. Screw that. And like this, going back to Chad, what I've said, people say, well, aren't you worried about a rookie's confidence if he gets hit or isn't successful? If that rookie quarterback, Bo Nix or anybody else in the test of time, throws a pick and wilts, you shouldn't have fucking drafted him in the first place anyway. Because you're going to have a lot of failures early on. Manning leads the league in interceptions as a rookie. We saw Elway get booed. And people that don't know, Elway got booed at times in Denver. I remember sitting at a party in December, like a holiday party. They were playing in fans, and they were like, oh, gosh, Elway. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know what the alternative is out there? Give it a. This was earlier in his career. So I'm on Bo Nix's train. He'll go through some struggles, but he'll also do some things that you say, damn, this is another level that the other two guys just can't do, and he's got a hell of a play caller. This is the right move, and it's he'll be confident enough that he can overcome some failure and handle success. I need a quarterback that's got guts enough to get punched in the face, throw me a pick, come back and battle it out, and we've seen him. He went through some ups and downs at Auburn. Oregon played great, and I think in the NFL, I have zero issue with playing a guy as a rookie that I'm worried about his fragility. Fuck fragility. At that position, I drafted him because I did my due diligence, and I need to know when things go crappy, where's Bo Nix or a rookie quarterback going? Caleb Williams, we're playing him now. The age thing doesn't matter anymore, experience. You're going to get it on the job, and I think this gives Denver the better chance to win than the other two.
61 collegiate starts, 5 seasons, and almost 2,000 pass attempts between the two. And also, Sal's, I think it's so important for young quarterbacks specifically. You'd know better than I, but getting the ball out of your hand as quickly as possible. And we know that Bo Nix will do that because of the systems he's in. And we know that Zach Wilson has struggled with that. Some of those other guys have struggled holding on to the ball too long, looking downfield. No. I want it out in 2 seconds. And if not, we're going to blow a foghorn behind your head. And I think that's probably what Sean Payton's looking at.
100%. 100%. I trained quarterback. I was training one yesterday around the field. He's new at the position, but he's got a lot of ability. Eighth grade kid who can rip it, right? He's a good player. But his biggest problem, he's been such a good athlete. They've moved him where they needed somebody. Now they need a quarterback, and we're going to make him a quarterback, and we're going to do that. But as I told him, and I tell all of them, better to be early than late, better to be urgent than hurried. And when I say I don't ever talk to my quarterbacks about hurried, and you are 100% correct. The ability to anticipate and throw people open is the most underrated thing that we talk about, but not enough. Right. We think you got to see both receivers' eyes or both numbers on the jersey if he's a two-digit guy to throw it. Young guys think that. And then the strong-arm guys that are young in ability, they think, well, I can be a little late with the football because I'm going to make up with it with a powerful arm. You can get away with that at 8th grade Swickley, Pennsylvania. You can't get away with it on Sundays or Saturday nights in Power 5 football. This is a – The window I'm talking about in high school is you can drive a truck through it if you're reading it right. The window in college shrinks to, you know, a little better. That's what you're throwing to in the NFL, a coffee can, right? Coffee can size window. And if you're late, listen, we're in a league when the outside linebacker can outrun a running back. So those guys attack the ball quick. And Sean Payton likes the ball out. And here's another thing. Got to get rid of the hero syndrome for not just young quarterbacks, all of them. And for Bo Nix, the key here is, and he's learned it well, like you said, ball out, catch, the quick game, the curl game. Take it, get through your progressions. Boom, if not, use your feet as a check down or throw the ball to your mom in the stands and we'll tee it up another down. Or your pops, whoever wants that souvenir. But don't hold it because holding it gets you in trouble with sacks. Offensive linemen do not like it, and you want to make sure those guys are happy. It's better in the run game because it keeps defensive front sevens on skates. And we let those guys, those talented ability guys, get the ball in their hands, secure it, and go do something with it. So quarterbacks that throw with anticipation and throw people open and aren't afraid to take the simple, the completion. Third and four, throw the flat if he's open. We have too many guys, we've all been there, including myself, that will pass up the open guy that's short that you say, well, I've already premeditated my decision. I'm throwing it down the field. Just because we call it down the field doesn't mean you have to throw it. A lot of first downs will be made on 3rd and 7 throwing the check down. Guy turn, fall, first down. So, and it's important. And Bo Nix is already ahead of that. A ton of football, a ton of big crowds, a ton of pressure. And now he's with a coach who preaches getting it out. And what did Drew Brees succeed at his whole career? Sideways, playing horizontal football, flat, you know, check down, little sprint out, throw to the flat, hit the curl route, all that 0 to 12 to 15 stuff that you're supposed to hit. And then when they decide to squat on, then you can hit the pump seam and all those other things down the field. But if you can't hit this stuff horizontally, why would I give you any vertical respect defensively? I'm just going to squeeze your ass and make it tough. So Bo Nix gives you the ability, and he's played in it. Spread it, throw it, get under center. He'll do a little bit of everything with Sean Payton. But timing and anticipation and having the balls and the trust to throw people open when you don't see them is just all about reading coverage as well, understanding what defensive fronts and coverages are trying to present you.
All right, so you want to throw people open. I'm sure you saw this highlight. Everybody did. But this is Aaron Rodgers to Garrett Wilson in the practice against the Giants that they had. It came out that he's not going to play at any of the preseason games. Aaron Rodgers is. I mean, these guys were tearing it up, actually. This is the one over the middle where he just gets lost in the middle of the coverage, and there it is. So Aaron Rodgers isn't going to play. He opens his season up against the San Francisco 49ers on Monday Night Football, September 9th. In that practice, Sal's against the Giants, 16-22, 3 touchdowns. Wilson had 6 catches on 8 targets. Look, it's a practice. I understand that. But what I wanted was 2 parts from you. What are you expecting from the Jets this season as far as being a contender? And then what do you do with the Giants? The Daniel Jones experiment has failed. They're going to fire their coach. Again, Malik Nabers is already dinged, and he's getting hit in the hands with balls. And he looked rattled after that practice. I don't know if you guys saw any of his comments, but he was upset. I mean, Breece Hall, they're taunting this Giants team as they're leading the field. I almost feel like we always talk about, what is it, relegation in soccer, where it's like, hey, go down and marinate in the UFL for a couple of years. You're not ready for this type of life. And I don't know, when do we have that conversation about the Giants? They just seem like a lost franchise. I was hoping you'd kind of talk about the duality of the direction of both those teams.
Let's start with the Giants first. Isn't it amazing? Think about the conversation we were having three quarters of the way through Brian Daboll and Kafka, the offensive coordinator's first season. What was it, their first season or second season? Playoffs? They get they went in and won the first playoff thing, got there. Whether it was Philadelphia that beat them up, right, in the second round, wasn't that it? 2 years
2022.
Ago, and then the conversation last year. Think how quickly the shine is as bright as it can be. And Brian Daboll was the hottest commodity in the league. First year coach kicking ass. Mike Kafka, coordinator. Oh, he's going to be the next head coach. Daniel Jones had an all pro type C. I mean, played his ass off. And then a year later, don't have as many weapons. Jones gets hurt. It seems like there was no rhythm, no playmakers. And the Giants are back to being what the Giants have been for a minute, right? If they don't make the playoffs, I don't think Brian's going to last. And I don't think that the staff will be gone, and if they don't make major improvement, and Daniel Jones won't be the quarterback. Now, what they're going to do during the season, who the hell knows? I mean, in truth, as much as I like the story of Tommy DeVito, Daniel Jones gives you a better chance to win. And I know we roll our eyes and say, well, does he? But we'll see. I don't know who – you know what? I still, after this time, I watch him. He's got pretty solid mechanics. I don't know his mental toughness, meaning Daniel Jones, because I've never been around him, but – The fluctuation between who he was 2 years ago and then who he was before that and last year when he got hurt is a bit alarming, because like there shouldn't be that much gap between, if you're a good player, those don't fester and last that long. So I think this is a career changer. This year has to happen for all, or the Giants will do what they've been to. They'll clear house again.
Sure.
And I think they're an average football team with average talent right now. They got some good parts. The sum is not very good. And Daniel Jones' starting career in New York rides on this season, and Brian Daboll's head coaching career. If they end up going 6-11, they'll clear house. So they'll beat somebody they're not supposed to beat, and they're going to get beat by teams that they're not supposed to get beat by. That will happen this year. I don't know what the future for Daniel Jones is. He got paid, so there's some guaranteed money there. But they have just got to play better, and they got to load up on more weapons, which – that's future, because we're here and the season's presenting itself, and we already with his receiver going down, who's a playmaker. I don't know how they're going to muster it up with smoke and mirrors, I guess, and Daniel Jones having an out-of-body experience with the Jets. First off, I changed my way over these last decade and a half. I wouldn't play Aaron Rodgers a snap in the preseason, other than what I did there. There are certain guys, the risk is just too great, especially in his situation. Now, why are we surprised? I've never understood this. Why are we surprised when we see Aaron Rodgers do well? I mean, I understand all the shit he does in the offseason in dark rooms, and that people think he beats to a different drum. That's okay. What about Aaron Rodgers tells you that we're shocked that he can throw the motherfucker? I mean, seriously, that I'm always flabby. Oh, he hit a seam route. The dude's been doing it for four decades, it feels like, and making every throw, and it's been on time. But because he got hurt, we're like, oh, we're shocked that he can throw a comeback and throw a dig route. And that throw he made, the deep one that dropped into the bucket that you couldn't walk out there, I wouldn't have been able to walk out and hand it to him like that. Isn't that who he is? We talk about release, and you talked about earlier about on time and throwing and anticipation and making sure you're not late. Well, aside from Marino and Rodgers, who's thrown the ball more on time than those two cats in their career, right? Yeah. So his performance doesn't shock me that he plays well against teams like this. And I do think I like the preseason practices on the field more than I do preseason games, because I like the competitiveness, because those guys are there. You've been around each other a day or two of practices. I like it. I don't need to see if Aaron Rodgers can throw a curl route in a preseason game against cover four when nobody's really going to rush and hit him. I know the injury last year, which is another reason I don't want the Achilles out there. But do I really need to see eight throws in Aaron Rodgers? Well, he needs to get in rhythm. What the hell has he been doing for 3 weeks on the practice field and all off season? Getting in rhythm. I need to protect the quarterback. They've got all kinds of weapons. I'm going to tell you this. If he plays 17 games and their weapons are intact, they will compete for the baseball mode, the AFC East this year. They will compete for it. They've got a Hall of Fame quarterback who's accurate. They've got a home run hitter at running back. Their wide receiver Wilson's a stud, and they've got a whole bunch of bandwidth weapons. I just want people to say, man, he's not playing? Great. Why would he? what do I need to see? So the fan base, when he walks off the field, they can say, Aaron's back. He was 4 of 5 to 2 checkdowns, a curl, a post, and missed a comeback. He's back. He made it through. Why risk it? I just saw that. I know what I need to see. He's got to get in competitive mode. Your ass. He's plenty competitive. And you know him. He is a scorekeeper. He's keeping score on everybody that's doubted his ass. Everybody that said Jordan Love's better at Green Bay. Everybody that said he's going to be a bust. He's keeping score on all these pricks. I'm telling you. And I'm not saying they're pricks, but you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
He'll get his prick in too, where it's like, you guys have no idea what I'm about to bring to you. Whether he does or not, we'll see. He's not lacking confidence, and I assure you he doesn't need one damn preseason throw in a game to – if he doesn't play well, it won't be because he went and hit a golf ball in June, or because he didn't play in a preseason game. It'll be because injuries, he missed a game. Aaron Rodgers will play well if he's healthy. I've seen the movie about 16 times, meaning years. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Sean, what did you make out of the latest stories from Miami of the Tua Tagovailoa Brian Flores era, where it was either did you see that as hard coaching or Brian Flores just being a jerk to Tua, telling him he stinks, telling him he can't make it, he's not helping the team? And then subsequently, you look at the coaching records of Mike McDaniels and Flores. They're pretty similar so far through the first 2 years of both of their tenures. Do you read in a lot to that, that whole situation as a former quarterback?
I know this. The quarterback is a little more comfortable and playing better now and got 53 million reasons why he's enjoyed it under McDaniel. And remember this, too, and you guys know. I mean, Mike's talk about a mad scientist with his offensive run game stuff and all the different stuff he does. And Brian's a defensive guy that wants to keep the game close and knock you in the mouth and blitz you. As far as it goes here, I never believe in airing dirty laundry. Gone or in the same. That's just not for me. I know why guys do it and they get caught in a podcast and they're emotional and they say it. I don't know what purpose it serves other than Tua telling us that Brian Flores coaches hard and can be a prick at times without saying so much, as if we didn't know that.
Sure.
And on the other side, Flores, he took, pretty much the high road. And I don't think, to me, it doesn't seem like Tua has a lot of venom in his body. Like I think he was just being honest. And we get mad at athletes for telling us the truth. And then when they tell us the truth, we're pissed. But when they don't tell us the truth, we think they're two straight men. Why won't you tell us the truth? What are you afraid of? Well, he told us the truth, how he felt. And now people are like, well, he's soft. Listen, it's hard to be soft and play that position. I do know this. I think it's twofold. And I don't like to sit on the fence with this. I think one is Tua, it's obvious, prefers to be an arm around him and coddled and told how great he is time and time again. That's his personality. And yet it's odd because his dad, he used to say, his dad beat his ass if he'd throw a pick on a Friday night in a high school football game. Remember that story, guys, when college game day, that he said his dad, he'd get a spanking or whooping at times if he didn't play well. It was tough love at home and how he grew up. And yet tough love from a coach bothered him, apparently, according to him. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I know guys on teams, you need 53 personalities if you're a head coach. One guy needs a boot up his ass. Another needs a cleat in his ass. Another needs to be, be canoodled and tell him how great he is. Another, he doesn't want to talk to you. You're the head coach. You just go, coach, let me play. I've seen them all. And so we can say soft or that he likes coddled. Okay, he's not the only one in the league that needs to be told how good he is. But also on the other side, to have a coach browbeat you, if that's what happened daily, day in and day out, the beatdown becomes you're not only overcoming defenses and trying to make plays in the toughest sport in the world to play and toughest position, but you're also having to deal with your coach. You make a throw and he's still mad at you. Sure. You go into tape and you just go in. You go in negatively every day. It's like that when you hate your job. You don't want that. So I would think if I'm Flores, I'd want my quarterback to feel good and my teammates, my players to feel good. But I don't think you got to give up tough coaching and tough love. Sometimes a guy need to be cussed out. On the other side, Mike McDaniel goes at it a different way and Tua has responded. So it'll work out great for both. It tells me Brian Flores probably to get his next head coaching job is going to have to be a kinder, gentler guy when he deals with different players and personalities. And it tells me, or it will beg the question, what's going to happen in the playoffs or if it's nut cutting time and Mike McDaniel has to go off on Tua, how will he respond? Right. I just think it's all about respect and all about coaching. You can't coach everybody the same. You can have your philosophy, but you got to change. We're in a time where people change. And nowadays, 2024 athletes, I'm sorry to tell you, if he did that to everybody on the team, 30 of them would hold out and not show up the next
year.
That's how, I mean, we've got to that point. It doesn't mean you're soft. Some guys just don't want to be humiliated in front of their teammates. And it felt like Tua felt like he was being browbeaten, could do no right. So it's worked out for Tua, and he's a good player. I don't think he's soft. I think he probably needs approach a different way. And there's other quarterbacks. You didn't need to kick Jim McMahon's ass one day. You didn't need to say anything. You could have cussed him out, and Jim would have smiled and said, you want to go get a beer after? So it depends on who you got. So I just don't believe in selling guys out in public afterwards. But I don't think Tua, it was an angry intention. It was, this is better for me. I like Mike more. And some guys respond to tough love, and some guys respond to coddling. And I've been around both. If I got the dime for every time I was cussed out, be great. And if I had a dime for every time some coach told me I was pretty good, it'd be great too. So
yeah.
Some guys can handle both. He likes being coddled. And who wouldn't rather have somebody tell you how great you are as opposed to somebody telling you you're horseshit all the time? So I like Brian. I think he's a good coach. But I think he's probably going to have to change his ways to get back in the head coach a little bit. Just some dynamic shift for him, and it'd be kinder and gentler Brian Flores in his next head coaching gig.
I know we're coming up on your limit, Sal. I really appreciate the time. The one part about it that really stuck out to me is two things. One is we were talking about the owner of the Dolphins coming out last week and saying we're going to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And it's like, it's fine for him to say that, but then his coach is asked that, his quarterback is asked about that, his players are asked about that. And my feeling is always, I don't want to do anything that makes my guys' jobs more difficult. And if you look at Mike McDaniel, he is going to be asked about this. Now, Tua's teammates are asked about this. Tua has not addressed the media since he dropped this, let's call it what it is, an atom bomb, saying this isn't just he was too tough. It's this guy's a bad person. He used that vernacular.
Yes.
And that's the part that I'm like, you're a leader of men now. You're G'd up. You can't make everyone's job more difficult because you have some feelings about this.
Chad, it's so funny. I'm so glad you said that. Not funny. I'm so glad you said that, because on my show when it happened, I said the same thing. I said, now play that again. I said, what you have to – he didn't say, I don't like him as a coach. I mean, all this. But he snuck in there, and that's the point. Because I don't know about you guys. Does it seem like Tua is an angry, mean guy?
No, not at all.
Does,
no,
right?
He's beloved.
Seems like he's got nothing but that everybody loves him, and he's just a good dude, right? And Brian Flores is Brian. Here's the problem. Brian Flores coaching like this 30 years ago, he'd have been the king. It's just, I mean, or less, right? It's just, you know, different eras, and doesn't mean he's not a good coach. He may have to shift his narrative or his paradigm, like we all do in society and coaching and playing. Look at what we do with offenses. We don't get under center anymore for the most part in college, for the most part ever. And coaches that have taught that their whole life. The Jim Harbaughs had to adjust, get under center. Let's get in the gun. How are we? You just got to adjust. It's part of life and part of coaching. But when the bad person part came in, I'm thinking, now that's DNA. That's character flaw. If it's true, this is all, you know, this is the Dolphins and he said versus Flores, and there's other players around. I'm sure they could validate it. But yeah, when it gets to that, it crosses over the line of coaching. Then it becomes, you're not only making it tougher on all the players, it's almost as if you're so unwilling to want to build a self-esteem and a foundation of feeling good when you come to work, that it will eventually backfire. And you can't. And if you're not good and that's your approach, if your team's not good, you will last a lot longer building people's self-esteem than you will breaking it down. Because once you lose a season and you're an angry guy, if that's the way they perceive you, they will run you out quicker than you can imagine. Then the guy they think is trying to make everybody job easier. And real quick on that, and what are the, when the Dolphins owner says we're going to the Super Bowl, listen, can you imagine now Tua or Mike coming out? Well, our owner's out of his damn mind. Right? Which they probably want to say, don't put that pressure. Of course we want to go to the Super Bowl, but even the guy who's been to two Super Bowls in a row, Andy Reid, ain't coming out saying we're going for the third.
No.
I mean, they're going for it. They know we're going to win it. So to me, there's just, I think sometimes common sense ain't so common. But I wonder if the Flores Tua thing's done, if Brian will stay high road, or if he goes on a podcast in the offseason and say, listen, I'm coaching a guy who was over that I couldn't hand. I mean, if it gets deeper than it's been. But it's just an odd situation. I'm not big on it, because then you have to answer questions that take away from the focus of what you're trying to get done and respond to them in kind as well.
Sean Salisbury Show on the iHeart Radio Network. You can get it on the app, Sports Talk 790. And, of course, a must follow on X, Sean.
Can I ask you guys one question?
Yes, sir.
Real quick before on my way out, before I use up all your time. One team in the NFL, I don't care if it's AFC or NFC, that you believe – when we're talking in December, we're going to say, I cannot believe they're in this position. Good or bad. Who is it?
Tor?
Oh. One team.
And it could be bad. Like we said, the Kansas City Chiefs go 7-10, right? Or good, that we like the Texans last year, 3 wins and get to 10 and win the division when nobody thought they'd win 5 games or 6 games.
So I got one. I think it's going to be the Tennessee Titans. I think Will Levis is going to be able to play ball. I think they got 2 pass catching. They have upgraded their wide receiver core exponentially. Their offensive line, they invested in center. They invested in tackle. They invested in their defense. I love the fact that Callahan brought his dad in. An offensive line coach is as valuable an asset as you can have in this league, and that was one of their true strengths. They addressed everything. I'm not saying, Sal's, you know, they're 13 wins, but I think they could contend for a wild card spot. I think maybe they could split with the Texans, and that would be – if they're sitting there, you know, in the first round of the playoffs and the Jacksonville's at home, I think we could be saying, wow, I didn't expect this team to be here.
And he's an enormous – the quarterback is – it's. I don't need to ramp up his competitiveness or his enthusiasm because he's got all that. I need to say, Will, just – dude, you got all this. Just
calm down.
It's going to be okay, dog. We're good. Because I guarantee he's going to come out in the first game, first 5 throws. One of them's going to end up in, like, the upper deck.
Dude, geez, so ginned up. Okay,
throw it up there and now settle in and we'll go. Yeah. And it's interesting in this division because Anthony Richardson and him, and we know what Lawrence is and CJ Stroud. There's some good young leader. I mean, especially potential in that division. And 2 of them have given production. What about you, Tor? What do you think?
I'd say Tampa Bay. I really liked the latest reports of teammates saying that Baker Mayfield showed up looking like an action figure this year. They still have a very strong offense. Their defense did not lose a lot of players. I like that they retained Antoine Winfield Jr. The offensive line is good. I love Tristan Wirfs, and they keep on reloading on the interior offensive line, the guards and center. Every year it feels like they have a catastrophic injury at one of those 3 positions, and then their second string guy steps up and you see, he was top 3 in PFF grading, which I don't always buy into, but it has to mean something. So I think Tampa Bay being really in the playoff hunt coming down to December and maybe leading the NFC South at that point, that would be my team, I think.
And you know what's great? And who's talking about Tampa?
Nobody. Because of Atlanta, because of the Falcons.
Exactly. Falcons and Cousins and Penix, and you got all these weapons and Drake London and the running back and Bijan. I mean, it's a fantasy guy's dream, right? And everybody's talking. And this is the first time Tampa name has been mentioned in 3 months.
Sure.
So I like them both. So there'll be more to discuss next week. And we got college football this weekend, guys, which I'm like, well, I'm like a pig in shit. I'm so excited. Even though it's week 0, which I don't understand why it's not week 1. They're actually
sure.
But I digress. Cigars and good TV and some good whiskey. And let's get after it, man. I love it. I can't wait.
We're not without big time football in some capacity for the next give or take how many months. God bless
can't
America.
Wait. There you go.
Sal, you're the best. Thank you so much for the time this week.
Thank
brother.
You.
Great to see you. Can't wait to see you next week. There's our guy, Sean Salisbury, at Sean Unfiltered. Pleased to be sending him a tweet and telling him you enjoyed him on the show. Let's take care of some business here, Tor, before we get at it. Jeffrey McKenzie Smith became a YouTube member. Thank you, brother. Mike Alkis is now a YouTube member. Thank you. And SpiderClam, $5. Sup, fellas? Always look forward to the show. Every episode kicks ass. Can't see anything ever being better than the NFL. I think maybe Street Corn Tor is in the same conversation, but better would be tough. Better is a tough thing to get ahead of. Cold movie theater, big fucking giant Coke Zero, big box of candy. That's closed, but not better.
I've seen the crystal clear waters in Turks and Caicos. I've seen the bamboo forests in Japan. I've swam in the Mediterranean. It's not better than the NFL. It's just not better than sitting down on your couch and with any type of filthy food watching football. It doesn't get better than that.
Look at Flex Grossman over here. Jesus Christ. I had no fucking idea you were going to go all humble brag on us. God damn. Thank you, Clem. Corey Rita, $49.99. Thank you so much, brother. Wow. BTOS and Sal's is a winning combination. Salisbury will be with us for the duration this season on Thursdays. So please, if you know somebody that is a football fan, podcasts are available, iTunes, Spotify, check it out. And $49.99 Super Chats greatly help out our cause. Thank you so much, Corey Rita. Our dude, large mouth ass, $20 Super Chat. Love the show, boys. Wish my Steelers traded for Dotson. Yeah, that was the beginning of the show, Tor. If you were in on the Brandon Ayuk sweepstakes, I'm not comparing the two as players, but if you drop out, that is a nice consolation prize. Former first round pick, guy that's got some peel the top off type of speed. Don't really know what's going on in Washington. I would have a lot of confidence bringing a guy like that in if I had a functional offense with a coach and an offensive coordinator I trusted and saying, I bet we can get you to 900 yards and six touchdowns this season.
Yeah, the Steelers always feel like a team that has the bevy of riches. They always draft skill players really well. I know that there's some concerns that Jaylen Warren has a bit of a hamstring tweak issue going into the season, which isn't great. But they get wide receivers and they draft guys I remember when they drafted Najee Harris, whether or not you're up or down on him, he's been a serviceable running back for them. And he was the first running back off the board a couple years ago. And all I was thinking was, how could we let Pittsburgh have another great running back? How could it happen after we see guys come in after James Conner, after Le'Veon Bell, after all these premier guys? And I guess they don't really, they felt like Deontay Johnson got as far with him as they needed. So we'll see how much, if they reload.
It's a giant pain in the ass though, too, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm them, I'm more aggressive because I've scored 15 points in the preseason, by the way. Yeah. And both of my quarterbacks have looked like shit. If they can even get on the field up into this point.
So I saw someone had a thought piece about the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh. Yeah. They said that Russell Wilson should be traded to Minnesota so Justin Fields could get the keys to the car this year, so Minnesota has more depth.
I'm going to go ahead and pull all those clips from Warren Sharp that we had on Monday. I mean, Justin Fields, if I could get the undying loyalty that Justin Fields has from these dick riders on fucking social media, like, wow, God bless him for being able to do that. But Jesus Christ, Caleb Williams and Russell Wilson just constantly catching shrapnel because of the ghost of Justin Fields. Thank you, large mouth ass. Mike from Don't Sleep Energy, $49.99 Super Chat. This is the shit. Sal's fucking, I assume he meant pissed. I'm late. Love BTOS. Thank you very much, Mike. And thank you for always listening and being so GD supportive. I appreciate it. Corey asked, is Sal's inked up? Yes, he is. Sal seems to have a giant tattoo sleeve.
Yeah.
And he rides motorcycles and smokes cigars and gets in fights and plays football. He's a man's man. He's not like the guys you're watching right now.
Yeah. It's a little different. My feminine tattoos look twice as feminine when standing next to Sean Salisbury.
Although Torres stood in the jungles of Belize and he's eating crackers with easy cheese. He's like, I didn't realize Dusty Rhodes was my goddamn co-host over here. Oh, my God.
I'm the son of a government contractor, Daddy.
You won't come in here as the Midnight Rider. I would be so steamed up. Thank you so much, Mike from Don't Sleep, Corey Reed, a large mouth ass. This is the one that I really like, Tor. I didn't play this one earlier. Yes, Jets, Jets, Jets. This is the one from the stands when he throws fucking bomb. It's fucking goddamn dirtbags.
Gosh. Look at him trot. Okay.
Oh, got knocked over. Jets, all right, it's a practice. Keep it in your pants.
That Jets chant always stinks.
It's just if you can get stupid people away to feel like they're involved. Okay, I pulled this video. The point I was making with Sal's, by the way, the Brian Flores to Tua Tagovailoa shit. First of all, are we allowed right now, Tor, to say the Bill Belichick coaching tree is a giant steaming pile? Like Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia, all these guys are assholes. Everyone hates them when they leave town. They never get the go back to Romeo Crennel, all these fucking guys. Charlie Weiss. It's never worked. I mean, if you compare the Shanahan coaching tree to the Belichick coaching tree, it ain't no comparison. So as much as I'd like to go on here and to dirt up and say these guys are pussies and real football, eat raw meat and drink blood, it's like it's Tua Tagovailoa. It's not Fran Tarkenton. You're not going to be able to call him a big steaming pile of shit every time he comes in. I don't care what their records are, by the way, Tor. You just look at what the production is out of all of those pieces are on the field. And I get it. Brian Flores was going through crazy shit down there. They were asking him to tank, allegedly. The team's tampering with fucking, you know, Tom Brady. I mean, Miami's a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
But if I'm Tua, maybe I wait until the season's done to drop that bomb. And I'm guessing what happened is Lebatard just hit him at the right moment. Like when you do an interview, sometimes you're not. One time I was interviewing Kurt Angle, Tor, and I asked him a question about Brock Lesnar.
So jealous.
Bro, here's my humble brag. You swam in the Mediterranean. I interviewed Kurt Angle in 2006. He hit me with a 45-minute answer where I just sat there and I just let him talk. And I don't know what he was going through at the time. I'm guessing it was something. But I was like, shit, I guess I asked the right fucking question. Maybe that's just what happened with Lebatard. But if I'm Tua Tagovailoa, I don't know if I drop that atom bomb right before the season begins.
The only reason I would do it is to possibly boost the morale of the current regime and say, hey, we got the boogeyman out of town. It wasn't positive then. It's positive now. The vibes are high. The team is rolling. Everyone's on the same page. If that was how it was meant to come off, I would understand that. It's just not how it came off. It came off as, I'm going to shed some light on Brian Flores saying all these things about me
while I was trying to be
a quarterback. Yeah.
I don't think he should have gotten personal.
That got a little. I think it got away from him. Where he, if he had coach speaked it up a little more, it probably would have been way less of a story. Because you know, you could interview anybody in Atlanta about Arthur Smith, and they're not going to talk about him fucking the team over for the last 3 years. But they'd say, yeah, you know what? We're excited about the new. We're excited to have Raheem Morris back. Everyone's on the same page. We're doing good. And it's definitely a new, fresh vision for the team.
I'm going to give kind of a clumsy comparison here. They recently asked Josh Allen about his contract because all these other quarterbacks have like leapfrogged him and there's all these hold-ins and these assholes are asking more money when their contracts isn't up. And he's like, I'm happy with my deal. I think it's fine. I'm glad these other guys are getting paid. He answered it perfectly. Tough question. I think that Flores, when he got up in front of the microphone, was as un-Belichickian as he possibly could be. He was honest. He was forthright. He didn't deny any of it. He didn't go back at Tua, and he admitted to us, it shook me. Like, I didn't want to hear that, and I've still got work to do, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we all fuck up. We all say shit we don't mean. We all think sometimes we're doing the right thing, and we ain't. And for a big, tough football guy, he could have just hid from the media. I don't know how often defensive coordinators give press conferences before the season, but I respected that a lot, too. So maybe there'll be a catharsis here for both parties, and they both end up being better because of it.
I would hope so. It could just be one of these situations where they needed to fail to get better, which is so cliche and hack to consider. But it is sometimes the progression in the NFL. You need Bo Nix to get eaten alive in Auburn to go thrive at Oregon. And now look where Auburn's doing better now and Oregon's doing well now. And Bo Nix is in the NFL as a first round draft pick. So sometimes football can work out that crazy way. I'm just always in the business of not creating non-football headlines in the preseason.
Yeah,
that's a great March topic. It's a great June topic. Off-season, true off-season, let that fly on the Lebatard show. Go ahead. But when we are 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away from really getting going into the throes of it where every game matters, I don't need really a big story distraction. I'd like to be out of the media spotlight during training period.
And here's one of the reasons, by the way, this is the coach of the Dolphins addressing this after it first came out. Check out the body language here.
You know, I think there's been so much talk.
Look how tired he already looks. Here's what I'm saying. This is Mike McDaniel, and I don't know what's going on. A lot of people have brought his look up. I don't know what he's going for right now, other than he's the weirdest dude on the planet. Are those blue light glasses? Do you think those are prescription lenses? I'm not sure. But look at the way he has to
talked about with, you know, I think there's some, you know, just naturally when different people are leading the organization.
Oh, he's over it.
Does he seem comfortable to you?
No, he seems. I can't believe we're doing this. I can't believe I'm answering questions about this.
By the way, if Belichick is gonna take shit for looking like shit, can we fucking? How about you wash your hair, buddy? How about we run a razor over that face? How about we put on, you know, some team apparel? I don't know. This guy, Tua saying he's the greatest coach ever means a lot more than me saying he rubs me the wrong way. He fucking rubs me the wrong way, dude. He's just a weird cat. But this is why I don't say what Tua said, because I don't want my coach having to look like this answering questions about what I said.
That happens. You know, I think for me, especially right now, I'm so laser focused into what this locker room needs.
I mean, I'm not going to say he took edibles before he did that interview, but Jesus Christ, if it was one of my boys, I'd be like, you're on edibles, dude.
He seems like one of those guys that just doesn't, that never sleeps well, never gets a good night. Always sleeping. Oh, I got 4 hours. Oh, all right, let's get it going. Give me some coffee. Let's roll. And football guys and coaches like that are different. I think it's an excuse. And Deion Sanders, this Deion Sanders quote has always stuck with me. That you don't need to have an 18-hour day. These guys don't want to spend time with their families if they're doing that. Sure. That's what the situation is.
Maybe.
I think he does have a laser focus, though, McDaniel.
Deion might have spent a little too much time with his family when they played Oregon last year. I'll tell you that much. Jesus Christ. Jorge Gonzalez, thank you for the $1.99 Super Chat. $1.99 Super Chats work just as well, by the way, friendos. Don't just sit there and let Corey Reed and Largemouth Ass and Mike from Don't Sleep bully you with their massive generosity. Worst chant than Jets is E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles, so lame. There is a Ravens chant now, which is even more embarrassing because it's just a derivative ripoff of these other chants. And I would also say, Tor, whoever ripped off Who Day or Who Dat, that's the most embarrassing one because they both blow dead bear.
Cincinnati ripping off Who Day, where Who Day took off right before the you know, it was prime Drew Brees era, right before they won the Super Bowl. It was Who Day, and then Cincinnati rolled out Who Dat a couple years later. That was
now you have it reversed. Reversed. Bengals are Who Day, the Saints are Who Dat. Both of them, I'm like, just shut up and watch the fucking game. I'll bet you $100. You googling it right now?
Yeah, I got to see this here.
Let's bet $100. Quick before you Google. Don't use that thing as your brain.
I gotta see now. I'm getting God damn it. No way.
You host two football shows, for God's sake. I shouldn't be. I'm old and washed up. I shouldn't be here correcting you on this horse shit. Thank you, Jorge. Appreciate you, bud. All right. Now, Tori, while I have you, your team has been spending like some drunken fucking sailors. They clearly believe they're gonna fucking be Super Bowl contenders this year, of course. Matthew Judon gets brought in. Justin Simmons, they sign him. Now, A.J. Terrell, four-year, $81 million contract extension, $65.8 million in fully guaranteed money. He is the second highest-paid corner in the league, according to Ian Rappaport. He was a second-team All-Pro. Here's what I like about him, Tor. His interceptions are non-existent because you either can't intercept the football and you're not that good, or you're so fucking good, they don't even try you. And he's on that side of the equation. So I don't mind investing in a corner like this, but good Lord, what a month for your Dirty Birds, huh?
Yeah, they are. They're spending the money, which I appreciate. I'd rather see my team spend money and take chances than not. I do like A.J. Terrell, even though last year he got burned by Michael Thomas for 2 touchdowns in week one, which was disgusting to see because Michael Thomas stinks now. But
he is old and disgruntled.
His interceptions being low, he'll drop a pick about every game. He'll just drop one in his hands. But at the same time, I like that he tackles. He's a cornerback that doesn't mind run fitting, which becomes a luxury in the NFL. In college football, you have to tackle as a cornerback. In the NFL, it becomes a little more optional. And I prefer guys that do tackle. He's not afraid to set the edge, which I think sets the value for him at 4 years, $80 million, because he could still cover. His legs looked like they were holding up last year just fine. And I wouldn't mind seeing him stay on the team as he enters the crafty defensive back stage of his career, because we're now on the tail end of fast, explosive, twitchy corner that can just run with anybody and just naturally get with any juke or any move. He's not going to. Now it's, okay, I've been in the league for 4 years, five, six, seven. I know what you're going to do, and I'm just going to lock you down. That is my favorite time in a cornerback's development where they truly see the game and they just don't get beat on the dumb stuff.
Are you going to feel bad if Desmond Ridder gets released by the Arizona Cardinals, as we learned that Clayton Toon, who I assume it's Altoon's son, is going to start and be the number two quarterback behind Kyler Murray. And a lot of people are saying they're only going to carry two quarterbacks. Would you feel bad if that was an eventuality?
I'll pop my bottle of Hennessy White if he gets released. I have no love lost for Desmond Ridder. Fun college.
Not his fault.
Quarterback story.
Not his fault where he was drafted. Not his fault with the position he was put in.
That's true. If I see the clips just about daily, because he hurt this franchise. Some interceptions that I don't think Shude would throw, dropping back, rolling out.
Hey, you saw me in that flag football game. I got a laser rocket arm with a Nerf turbo football.
I genuinely think versus Carolina last year, you wouldn't have thrown it to that dummy right in the middle of the field rolling out. You would have at least ran out of bounds taking a 6-yard loss and going for the field goal instead of throwing another red zone interception. No love lost for Desmond Ridder. Still high on the enemy list, I'd say, of my Falcons fandom.
CeeDee Lamb, fantasy-wise, is tormenting me. I have the fourth pick in the Cutthroat Island draft. It's either third or fourth, but it's right around there. CeeDee Lamb was a juggernaut for me last year, and they have even less options this year in Dallas, and Dak is going to be highly motivated. So in my mind, he is just as valuable, if not more so, than Jefferson or Jamar or any of these other guys that you're saying it could be a receiver taking a 2 or 3. When do I start getting nervous that he still doesn't have a fucking deal and we're about to conclude the third week of the preseason? When does he drop out of the top five for fantasy football purposes, or does he? Do we just assume he's going to be saddled up week one?
Well, I know that it'll happen. I don't think you should be nervous. You can be nervous right now, but once we hit stop record, it'll be CeeDee Lamb resigns to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, you're right.
All we have to do is tape the show and then wait 15 minutes and then the news will break.
I guarantee the Commanders are going to sign Brandon Ayuk after we trash them for the first 20 minutes of the fucking show. I'll bet you a dollar right now. I'll bet you shrimp arm. Oh, boy. Thank you again to Corey Rita and Largemouth Ass and Mike from Don't Sleep. High rollers that came in here. Guys, we're on Spotify and iTunes. So if you like the show, go in there and subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. And, of course, you can always watch on YouTube each Monday and Thursday throughout the rest of the season. Tori, I assume your other show is going to get real busy now that we've got collegiate football to speak on.
Hopefully so. We're trying out some of the in-game watch. I hate calling it a party, a watch stream, where watching the whole game through and through. People can pop in, pop out.
I like it.
And if they want to stick around, it's also, you know, easy clippable stuff. So we're gonna kind of make a run at that and see how it goes. Because some of these channels with a bunch of bores do it and they get 30,000 concurrent viewers on it.
Do they really?
Mind-boggling.
Wow. It just sounds like an awful way. I mean, I just love sitting around and watching football. It just sounds so fucking stressful to do that, but I don't know if there's money there. I did have an idea that you and I don't say we do it every week, but I would love to set up shop and do like a little mini show in between the 1 o'clock and the 4 o'clock game. I think that would be fun to do, you know,
just to check in. A little whip around.
Exactly. We'll call it the whip around. And then we'll whip out our phalluses and we'll swing them around. What the fuck am I talking about? This is such a bad idea.
I prefer the mess around.
One of my favorite songs. All right, very good. Tor, thank you, brother.
Thanks, Shude. And thank you, Sean Salisbury. He was spectacular as always.
He's the best, Annie. I just love him so much. All right, friendos, we will be back on Monday. Our guest is Anthony Becht, former head coach of the XFL champion St. Louis Battlehawks 2 years ago. They went to the playoffs in the UFL. He also now is the color commentary voice for the New York Jets, former Jet, former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, and he won me a fantasy football league 1 year. I picked him up off the waivers, and he caught a touchdown in the championship game, so he'll always have my loyalty. Until then, that is Radio's Gigantor. I'm Chad Dukes. Go long. Real long.
Hey, what do you got?
both types of sports.
Yeah, what's it do? Go long. Real long.
Both types of sports. Thanks for listening to Both Types of Sports. Please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you are listening to the show. And don't be afraid to share the show with a friend.